All right, here we go. Beers with Chad. I am Chad Wesley Smith. This is my podcast, Beers with Chad. Some of you may be previously familiar with it, but a quick background on me, if you don't know me, and on my podcasting history and why we're here and why I want to do this. So most of you probably know me as a powerlifter and a powerlifting coach. I lifted some of the heaviest weights in the world as a powerlifter and a professional strongman. Squatted 970 pounds, benched 567, deadlifted 815 for a 2,325 pound, 1,055 kilo total, which when I did it back way back in 2016, which is kind of unbelievable to think of right now, I think it was one of the 15 heaviest totals ever. Some people have passed it then, but since then, but I think it's still pretty strong. I'm also the owner and founder of Juggernaut Training Systems, which I founded in 2009 as a sport performance gym here in Orange County, California, where I live, where I grew up and still live, and have since grown it into international acclaim, some may say. Gotten to travel all over the world doing seminars, teaching people how to lift better, doing YouTube and all that good stuff. And in that, releasing the Juggernaut AI and Juggernaut BJJ apps, which are helping tens of thousands of lifters around the world get better and stronger. Also on the business side of things, which you probably don't know about, is I'm a real estate investor. I have just shy of 100 doors of long-term rental real estate. So we're going to be talking about that kind of stuff on here as well. Purple belt in jiu-jitsu at Gracie Baja headquarters in Irvine, California, under Philippe Delamonica. I've gotten the pleasure to train with strength coach for some of the greatest jiu-jitsu athletes of all time, Hamalu Bahau, Octavio Souza, Felipe Pena, tons of other great guys, MMA fighters as well, Naaman Gracie, Cub Swanson, Fabricio Verdum, all kind of great stuff. I'm a very amateur and average golfer. I'm an 11.5 index. My home course, Mesa Verde Country Club, and actually later today, right after I finish this, I'll be driving down to Torrey Pines to watch Mesa Verde's finest, Jake Knapp, new PGA Tour card holder, who I also used to be the strength coach for back in his days before he played at UCLA. And he's currently going into the last round, T5, at the Farmers Insurance Open, so excited to cheer him on. And then I just love sports, always have, football and basketball particularly. And I'm a big sports fan. Go Niners. Looking forward to the NFC Championship tomorrow, which is what I'm going to be talking about more today. So why do I want to do Beers with Chad? If you followed me for a while, you probably remember the Jug Life podcast, which, groundbreaking, some may say, in the lifting podcast world, spawning, inspiring the likes of Massonomics and probably some other podcasts as well. So I did 150, 200 episodes of The Jug Life, and it was, by powerlifting podcast in 2015 standards, pretty successful. It was getting about 50,000 listeners a week, but I kind of just got bored talking to people about how they bench, squat, and deadlift and how to bench, squat, and deadlift more. So back then, 2016, 2017, I guess really 2017, 2018, maybe started recording some of these Beers with Chad episodes for a little bit more casual look at the world of lifting and other stuff that I'm interested in. And then early in the pandemic, when there was nothing else to do, I started doing more of them, getting into some other topics and sports stuff that interests me as well. And then just kind of fell off and was lazy about it. But as the years have gone on and Juggernaut AI has become more and more successful, it's made my life of automated work a little bit less fulfilling at times. And now for probably like 3 years, I've been telling my wonderful fiance, Marisa Inda, that I really want to get back to doing podcasts. And I want to podcast about what I'm interested in, which is all the stuff I've already talked about. Lifting, business, jiu-jitsu, MMA, golf, other sports, life, and talking to the people in those worlds about the other stuff that interests them besides, just being an MMA fighter for MMA fighters and just being, a golfer for golfers and so on and so forth. But, a more well-rounded look at who they are as people. And hopefully through this, you get a more well-rounded look at who I am. So I'm me talking about books. I'm going to be talking about business. I'm going to be talking about, you know, from time to time, maybe some current events and my opinions on them. And if you're interested in that, awesome. You know, it was also a couple weeks ago, you know, I've told my friends, oh, you know, this is kind of my podcast idea and this is what I want to talk about. And they seemed, you know, to be like, oh, that's a good idea. And then the other week, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a very prominent podcaster, and he gave me some life advice and basically said, the great thing about podcasts are you can start tomorrow. So that wasn't yesterday, but it was close enough. So here we go. Beers with Chad. First reintroductory episode, drinking, starting off high quality with a glass of Blanton's. Cheers. So we sit here on the day before championship weekend. Tomorrow, AFC Championship, Chiefs at Ravens, NFC Championship, Lions at 49ers, and that's what I'm going to be talking about. So in the AFC Championship, we have a great matchup. The, what, six times in a row playing in the AFC Championship. Now, Chiefs versus the team that's looked like the best team in the NFL, certainly in the second half of the season and through the early part of the playoffs, the Baltimore Ravens. So is the Chiefs offense really back? You know, Chiefs football for the early part of Patrick Mahomes' career with Travis Kelce and with Tyreek Hill, it was this offensive juggernaut, able to score at a moment's notice, that incredible comeback they had, you know, against the Texans several playoffs ago and all that stuff. But this year, last year some, but this year particularly, their identity has been changing, and that identity has become more about defense, and their offense has really struggled at times. In the last couple weeks, it seemed like maybe the Chiefs offense is back. Not back to the Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, super fast guys running all over the field back, but back to playing high quality football. And I think that's a little bit of a mirage. You know, the first round of the playoffs, really bad weather, and playing a Dolphins team who is decimated on defense. They were missing Jalen Phillips. They were missing Van Ginkle. They were missing Nick Chubb. They were missing Xavien Howard. You know, most of their best defensive players were out. So the offense looking great there. And, you know, with Fangio leaving now and what's coming out there, it seems like some miscommunication, some mistrust, some issues going on with the defense beyond just the injuries even. So I can't say, oh, they look great against a decimated Dolphins defense. Their offense must be back. No, they played well. They played better. And building momentum is important. But they're not back because they scored a lot of points against the Dolphins. Last week against the Bills. First up, the Bills' defense is not the Ravens' defense. And last week's Bills' defense was not even the Bills' defense. Because, you know, yes, they've been missing Matt Milano all season. They've been missing Tre'Davious White. But the amount of starters that they were missing on defense last week, still not a great indication that the Chiefs' offense is back, because they were able to put up some points and get a narrow victory against a very undermanned Bills defense that played very valiantly but couldn't get it done. So I don't think that the Chiefs' offense is the 2019 Chiefs offense or the 2020 Chiefs offense, and it's not even that much better than the offense that struggled for a lot of the year. Now, if MVS catches passes, Rashee Rice is definitely playing better now than he was, you know, week 5 and 6. Travis Kelce is a very good player. He's not Travis Kelce of last year. Is he top level Travis Kelce for 3.5 hours tomorrow afternoon? We will see. But he's the defense is able to focus on him so much more because they don't have a great, you know, number one wide receiver to go along with him. So some of it's going to be about Isaiah Pacheco and his ability to run the ball against the Ravens. If I was to describe Isaiah Pacheco's running style in one word, chaotic, hectic, spastic, all possible explanations for Isaiah Pacheco's running style. But what he definitely does is run hard as hell in his chaotic, hectic, and spastic way. But is he going to be able to run the defense or run against the Ravens defense well? So the Ravens last week against the Texans end up blowing the Texans out. But the first half of that game, 10-10 at halftime, you know, with the special teams touchdown for the Raven or for the Texans. But it was like, all right, the Texans are in this. They're playing well. They're playing good defense. They're moving the ball, not finishing drives, but moving the ball well. But if we go back to the beginning of the year, the preseason, and we would have said the Texans, the Houston Texans, with a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach, D'Amico Ryans, love him, and C.J. Stroud had an awesome year. But if we would have said at the beginning of the year, hey, I bet the Texans are going to be tied at halftime of the divisional round. We would have thought that whoever was saying that was out of their mind. Drug test them. They're crazy. So as great of a year as the Texans had, they weren't supposed to be there. They're not at that level yet. And they played the Ravens tough for a half. And then the Ravens did what the Ravens have done a lot of this year and blew them out. So they've looked great. So is Pacheco going to be able to run the ball effectively against that defensive line, which, yeah, Clowney's a name, but so many of the guys in their defensive line rotation are just these kind of no-name grinders who they might not be great players, quote-unquote, but they are definitely playing great. And then a great linebacker in Roquan Smith and a very good linebacker in Patrick Queen, Hamilton coming up and supporting the run. Is Pacheco going to be able to, you know, move that offense along with the run game, maybe mix in some Clyde Edwards-Helaire as well? He had a couple of good runs last week. So I don't think the Chiefs offense is all the way back because of these showings against, you know, very injured defenses in the first two rounds of the playoffs. So the Ravens are just strong and getting stronger. You look at the teams left in this year's NFL playoffs, the 49ers, the Lions, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. The Ravens have already dominated the Lions and the 49ers. They're a very, very good team. Their best this year seems to have been the best that any team in the league has played. And they're getting healthier. Mark Andrews playing. Huge, huge piece of their offense. This year, yes, Zay Flowers, OBJ, Bateman's been playing better. Lamar's had some non-tight ends to throw it to. Isaiah Likely playing a lot better now and really emerging. But last year and in the previous years, Mark Andrews was Lamar's guy. So for him to have been out for so long, even just the morale boost he's going to bring this week, let alone, you know, 2-3 catches and just how he can affect their scheme and affect the defense, how the defense has to approach things, they're going to have to account for Mark Andrews, because Mark Andrews for the last, you know, 4 years has been the best pass catching option on the Baltimore Ravens. So he's coming back. Then, yeah, the last several years, and this year included, the Ravens have had all these injury problems at running back. But, you know, Gus Edwards is in there. Their other running back's name is escaping me. But guess what? They also just added Dalvin Cook. So they've got plenty of depth at running back to keep bringing fresh legs at you, you know, all game. Dalvin Cook, a great player. You know, Dalvin Cook, yeah, he wasn't doing anything with the Jets, but who was doing anything with the Jets offense, you know, for the Jets offense this year? So Dalvin made a couple good runs last week. He's going to have a positive impact for them. So, you know, an already strong Ravens team just getting healthier and stronger here in the championship round. As we look at this from just a full matchup standpoint and these two teams compared to each other, think to yourself, how many guys on the Chiefs legitimately would start for the Ravens? So let's leave the quarterbacks out, because some of that's just a system style thing. I mean, what the Ravens do, they'd probably rather have, you know, the Ravens would take Lamar over Patrick Mahomes. 30 other teams in the NFL might take Patrick Mahomes, but for what the Ravens do, he's their guy. But let's leave the quarterbacks out of it. Travis Kelce would start maybe in some kind of two tight end set with Mark Andrews. I don't know that, you know, Kelce is necessarily a good fit for the Ravens because he's not a great blocker, but we can say that Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the game, so he would be your starting tight end. Those interior offensive linemen, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Joe Tooney would start for the Ravens, but Joe Tooney is going to be out. Rashee Rice, maybe the number two, probably the number three wide receiver behind Zay Flowers and OBJ if he was playing for the Ravens. So you've got, you know, four, maybe five starters. But mostly a Ravens offense. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Chris Jones would start for sure. Legarius Sneed would start for sure. Maybe Karloftis in a D-line rotation that they're going to do. Maybe one of the safeties. If they're running three linebackers, maybe Nick Bolton's the third linebacker, but he's not starting over Queen or Roquan. So you just have a much, much more talented Baltimore Ravens team. So when you take all those things into account, the Chiefs offense isn't really that much better than it was looking earlier in the year. Ravens were already better and they're getting healthier. Ravens are a more talented team. I think you play this game 10 times, the Ravens probably win 8 or 9 of those 10 times. But they aren't playing 10 times. They're only playing one time. And in that one time in an AFC championship game, can you pick against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid? Let's take a step back, look at Lamar's playoff history. Before this year, not very great. One win. Now, two wins. But is beating the Texans, a team that we talked about, before the year, no one would have thought Texans were making the playoffs, let alone making the second round, let alone being tied with the Ravens at halftime in the divisional round. Do I think Lamar is going to play well tomorrow? Yes, I do. He looked great last week. He's looked great all year. Lamar Jackson is a great football player and a great quarterback. But until he plays well at this level of the playoffs, we don't know that he's going to play well at this level of the playoffs. Where Patrick Mahomes, we know what he's going to do tomorrow. Assuming they can keep him upright, which going against that Ravens defense is going to be a tough thing to do, he's going to have a good game. He's going to play well. He's going to do everything that he can to put the Chiefs in position to win. So I think Lamar's going to play well. I could definitely see the Ravens winning by double digits. Staying with that idea of playing 10 games against each other, I bet 3, maybe 4 of those games, the Ravens are winning by 10 plus points against this Chiefs team. But again, it's only one game. It's tomorrow, AFC Championship, a place where the Chiefs have a ton of practice, a ton of experience, a ton of pedigree in these big spots, and the Ravens don't. The Ravens are a great football team, but they have not been to this level. Lamar has not shown that he can succeed at this level of the postseason. But I think he's going to, but it's going to be a tough game. I see Ravens 27, Chiefs 21. Patrick Mahomes having the ball with a chance to win the game at the end, and for once, him not pulling it off. So Ravens 27, Chiefs 21. Ravens are the better team. The better team's going to win. Chiefs wouldn't be shocked if they find a way, but I think they keep it close. Now onto the NFC Championship. My personal favorite team, the 49ers, they struggled last week. They stressed me out last week, big time. And the thing that was so stressful watching them is that they were not running the 49ers offense. The beautiful, orchestrated, multiple personnel motions. You have a fullback who could line up at running back, a tight end to split out at wide receiver, a running back who can line up at running back, slot wide receiver, a wide receiver who can line up at running back. These guys who can do it all. But when Debo went out early in that game, Kyle Shanahan seemed to forget how to run, a jet motion, how to run play action, how to get Brock Purdy moving. And the offense, it just wasn't their offense. It was Brock Purdy dropping, straight drop, patting the ball. Yeah, the weather issues, smaller hands, you couldn't hold on to the ball that well. But the impact of Debo being out and the impact of him going out during the game rather than being out for the whole week and then being able to game plan around him not being there was tough, because Juwan Jennings, third and Juwan, very good. He played a great game for Juwan Jennings. And he can fill in for that wide receiver stuff that Debo does. But it's so hard to have a back, when you have a player as unique as Debo Samuel is, it's very difficult to have a backup for that. That Juwan can do the wide receiver part of it, but all the run action stuff and the different motions and different formations, they lose that when Debo went out, and it's so tough to replace on the fly. I would have loved to have seen them try to put Christian McCaffrey in the Deebo role some and let Elijah Mitchell play some running back, because I have full faith that McCaffrey, you know, they could tell McCaffrey, go do what Deebo does on this play, and McCaffrey is going to know that and execute it. And the drop-off from Elijah Mitchell, from McCaffrey to Elijah Mitchell, is going to be less than the drop-off from, you know, Deebo to someone besides McCaffrey trying to fill that Deebo role that they just haven't practiced and they don't know exactly what they're doing. But it led to way too much straight drop back, and they weren't running the 49ers offense. And the couple plays where you did see Brock get moving, like rolling right and the beautiful touchdown throw to George Kittle, you know, in the final drive, that bootleg, you know, right off the bat, and it's like, oh, now they're running the 49ers offense. There's play action, there's motion, there's, you know, all this window dressing, eye candy to distract the defense, to get these receivers in open space to be the yak kings that they have been this year and so many years in the past. So Deebo's in, no restrictions. He said he's holding nothing back. I fully expect him to do great Deebo stuff. Next question about the 49ers. How good is Brock Purdy really? One of the most discussed, debated, hotly contested ideas all year. Let me preface this with saying I am biased towards Brock Purdy. Last year, before the 2022 NFL season, they have a banquet every year, an event, a week-long event, really, for Mr. Irrelevant, just down the street from me here in Newport Beach, California. And my buddies Colby, Nick, and I went to attend said Mr. Irrelevant banquet for Mr. Brock Purdy. And wonderful event at the Cannery Restaurant right there on the water in Newport. Your boy was overserved. We were all overserved. Open bar, extra high-end whiskey tasting tables, cigar rollers, all this stuff. I also got a good chat with Brock Purdy after that, which the next time I saw him, as I, again, full disclosure, am very good friends with Dustin Perry, the 49ers strength coach, and get to do some work and help them out. The next time I saw Brock Purdy, he didn't remember me exactly, but as soon as I was like, hey, Brock, good to see you again. I was at the Cannery. He's, oh, knew I recognized you. You were having a good time that night. Yes, I was. And I was loving everything that's happened with Brock Purdy. So right away, know that I am biased in favor of Brock Purdy, but trying to put that bias aside as much as possible. Brock Purdy, is he a great football player? Is he a great NFL quarterback? Probably not. But is he playing great? And is he great at running the 49ers offense? Definitely yes. And some of this is just like kind of a time domain situation, a time horizon. Has he played great for most of his, 19 games that he's played in the NFL? Yeah, he has. He's had a couple bad ones in there, but who doesn't have a bad one? It's so frustrating to me to see Brock Purdy or any other young quarterback, and they're trying to compare them to the entirety of like Hall of Famers' careers. Go back to 2001, 2002, 2003. Tom Brady was not Tom Brady. He was the definition of a game manager, game carried by a great defense. You know, he was throwing for 150, 160 yards a game, just trying to protect the ball, trying to get them in a position to win a game and rely on the rest of the team's strengths to do that. And they did very effectively. Brock Purdy is far beyond that. He is, you know, is he carrying the 49ers offense? No, but who does? You know, is Peyton Manning Peyton Manning without Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Dallas Clark, you know, and Brandon Stokley? Is Aaron Rodgers without Donald Driver and Jordy Nelson and the great receivers he had there? Everyone needs weapons. You know, Brock Purdy is excellent at distributing the ball to his weapons, to running Kyle Shanahan's scheme better than Jimmy Garoppolo did, the best that anyone has run Kyle Shanahan's scheme. So he's doing that great. So to see him get knocked and like, oh, well, he doesn't have, you know, many come from behind victories. He's had two opportunities in his whole career, two legitimate opportunities to make a game-winning drive. Earlier in the year against the Browns and last week against the Packers. earlier in the year against the Browns, a team that was playing at the time the best defense since the 1985 Bears, a game in the rain, which, yeah, he made mistakes. He put them in position to win. Brock Purdy's not the kicker. He did his part of the game-winning drive there, and Jake Moody unfortunately missed. And then in his other legitimate comeback opportunity last week against the Packers, he went 6 for 7 and had a big run, and his only drop, the only incompletion, was a drop by George Kittle. So he had a perfect last drive to win the game. The other game against the Vikings that he threw the two bad picks, the first of which was like, oh my God, what on earth was he looking at? Then, you know, 2 days after the game, when it's revealed that he's in concussion protocol, and you go back and look at that game and realize he got a concussion the play before he threw that terrible pick, explains a lot. So, I mean, no matter how great a quarterback is, he's not going to be able to protect himself against a concussion from getting hit in the head. Should he have come out and you know, or maybe checked to a run play the next one? Sure, but he didn't. So is he great? He is great at running the 49ers offense, and that's the team he plays for. The questions of, well, would he be able to run the Chiefs offense effectively, or the Ravens offense effectively, or the Bills offense effectively? It doesn't matter, because he doesn't play for those teams, and those quarterbacks don't play for the 49ers. And there are people who are, you know, quarterbacks who are definitely considered better, more talented than Brock Purdy, that I don't know that they would run Kyle Shanahan's offense as effectively as Brock does. So Brock, I think, is a very mentally tough player. You see the support that all of his teammates, these great, you know, potential future Hall of Famer veteran players have for him, and the faith that they have in him and belief they have in him. So I expect a big Brock Purdy bounce back this week against the Lions. A not great pass defense. And the other thing that the 49ers seem to have been struggling with is the defensive line. Nick Bosa, Chase Young, Arik Armstead, Javon Hargrave, Randy Gregory, you know, Cleveland Farrell, but he's injured. Javon Kinlaw. A lot of high draft picks in there. A lot of big money guys, a lot of big name guys. 0 sacks last week. Not, you know, the pressure numbers pretty solid, but not doing what you expect the 49ers defensive line to do. So why aren't they getting home? You can see it last week against a mobile quarterback like Jordan Love, and you can see it earlier in the year against Lamar Jackson. And when they play Kyler Murray, they do the slow rush, the contain rush, where they're not necessarily trying to get a sack. They're trying to not let the quarterback get out of the pocket and hurt them with these off-schedule plays. So they were doing some more of that slow rush against Jordan Love. Later in the game, they did get some pressure on him, led to the interceptions, helped seal the win for the 49ers. Jared Goff, not very mobile. I expect them to have a much bigger impact on the game against what's going to be what is a very good Lions offensive line. The other question for the D-line is, can they set the edge against the outside run game? And particularly against the pin-pull, you know, of a wide receiver or tight end coming in, kind of cracking the DN, the tackle pulling around that. They've struggled a lot against that. And you have a very, very good offensive line for the Lions with two very, very good running backs, physical wide receivers like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who, you know, are going to be able to get a solid block on Nick Bosa. So particularly without Cleveland Farrell, another high draft pick, D lineman for the 49ers, granted they didn't pick him and he's had a bit of a resurgence with them, but he's out, you know, and he's probably their best D end, you know, after Nick Bosa, but much better against the run than Chase Young and Randy Gregory are, who are excellent pass rushers in theory. You know, Chase Young hasn't really shown that. So tomorrow needs to be a time when Chase Young steps up, when they earn the right to rush the passer by playing tough against the run and setting the edge well against the Lions' outside run game. So when you look at the Lions, a team that's very tough not to like. I mean, how can you root against the Lions? I'm certainly not rooting against the Lions. I'm rooting for my 49ers. And the Lions are kind of like a junior 49ers in a lot of ways. Brad Holmes, their general manager, came over from the Rams. And probably most people would have thought, oh, he just came from the Super Bowl champion Rams. He's going to make the Lions in the image of the Rams. But he did it much more making them in the image of the 49ers, probably because when he was with the Rams, the 49ers were kicking the Rams' ass like 6 out of 7 games. Granted, the one that they lost was the most important one. But he's made the Lions in the 49ers' image. Penei Sewell, Trent Williams, Sam Laporta, George Kittle, both Iowa tight ends. Dual threat running backs, run the ball well, catch the ball out of the backfield well, Gibbs, McCaffrey. Yak-driven wide receivers, physical guys, Amon-Ra St. Brown, both Debo and Brandon Ayuk. Star, high draft pick defensive end, Hutchinson, Nick Bosa. Investing in linebackers, you know, drafting Jack Campbell early, in the 49ers with, you know, arguably the best duo in the league, Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. So very similar structures to the team where they're investing. The Lions guys just a little bit younger, you know, less name recognition, a little bit less proven, and certainly much less experience in this big spot as the 49ers. This is their 4th in the last 5 years NFC Championship game. So as we look at the game as a whole, I feel the 49ers are too good to play bad 2 weeks in a row. Debo, he's going to make an impact. He said he's not holding anything back. He's not guarding himself against injury in any way. Though even when he's not dinged up like he is right now, there's a lot of times that I wish Debo would guard himself against injury a little bit, because it's like, bro, do you have to try and break 5 tackles and drag 6 dudes on every play? Sometimes it's just like, don't go for the extra 1 yard and just go down and save yourself a little bit. But I guess if he did that, he wouldn't be Debo. So he's gonna make impacts in this game because he plays big in big moments. He had a huge game against the Eagles earlier this year, which the 49ers basically broke the Eagles' spirit, as you could see for all of their games after that. And this rivalry he's got with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, you know Debo's going to step up and make plays. The way he makes plays against the Cowboys, the way he made huge, huge clutch plays against the Cowboys in the divisional round 3 playoffs ago now, or the Rams, even when they lost the NFC Championship to the Rams, Debo makes huge plays and he's going to do that here. So can the 49ers play 49ers football on offense? Do they run the ball effectively in multiple ways? Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, Mixon, Elijah Mitchell in as well. And then all the play action and creativity that spawned from that effective run game. You know, is it the pass setting up the run? Is it the run setting up the pass? Both are going to be important. And when Kyle's calling his offense to the best of his abilities, it works so beautifully. Will the D-line be able to get home against a less mobile Jared Goff, but against a very good offensive line? Will the linebackers, Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw, be able to neutralize Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs catching passes out of the backfield? How well can the 49ers D-line hold up against a very good Lions offensive line in the run game? How effectively can they get after the passer? And how well can the 49ers O-line, you know, minus Trent Williams, which we know what the silverback is going to do, but, you know, Colton McKivitz in particular, how well can he hold up against that Lions pass rush and Aiden Hutchinson? And do the 49ers move the pocket, use the run actions to hold that D-line up a little bit and be more effective, allow Brock Purdy to be, you know, what we've seen him be when he's posting 150 plus quarterback ratings and leading the NFL and QBR and leading the league in all these efficiency stats, EPA and everything, having historically great season when it comes to all those EPA stats. So those are the issues I see, you know, if throughout this game, and I have faith in my 49ers to make a big bounce back from last week, win this game against the Lions, who, awesome season, they're pumped and they're gonna continue to be really good because they constructed that team so well in the image of the 49ers. And I'm thinking tomorrow, 49ers 34, Lions 24. So the 49ers cover, they've got momentum going into the Super Bowl against the Ravens for what's gonna be a big rematch of a catastrophe of a game earlier this year, but we'll talk about that when it's coming to fruition, you know, next week. So this was Beers with Chad. I'm Chad Wesley Smith. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you want to hear me talk about something else, you know, leave it in the comments. If you got questions, if you want to just talk shit to me, go for that too. Cheers. See you next week.